Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California in the Quicken Loan Studios. Quicken Loans applies simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Nice to have you here. Even better to be here. And I say that because we've got a great show for you. It's all lined up. It's all ready to go. Here's what we're working on today. Let me start you off with a telephone number, 1-800-636-8686. I do that because I'm looking for a quality phone call, but I know some of you are new to the program. Maybe you're finding it on TV, on CBS Sports Network. Maybe you're finding it in space. Maybe you went away for a little while and you came back. If you want to take your shot, go ahead and give us a call. I would love to hear from you on anything you want. Toll free, once again, 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter, at Jim Rome. Speaking of Twitter, I retweeted something from Liz this morning. Liz busted out with a lanyard that she found from tour stop number 32 in Austin. It's cool. It's taking me back. It's Thursday. Throw it back. Anybody have any good jungle pics that they want to shoot me via Twitter? Send it to me. Send it to me. Send it to Adam Hawk. I will retweet any good throwback pics from back in the day. That pumped me up. So Liz in Falls City hit me up with that. My gal Tracy responded by saying she was so glad she went to a tour stop. She went to Madison. Matt's taking me back, too. That was a wild event. Let's just say the kids in Wisconsin get after it. They get after it. Madison, I mean, every tour stop that we did, and we did dozens of them, it was a blast everywhere we went. And everywhere we went, let's just say, they got their party on before the event. But I'm not sure anybody got their party on before the event like Wisconsin, Green Bay, Madison, whenever we went there. Although pretty much everybody stood their ground. So if you want to throw something back to me, hit me up on Twitter. I'd love to see it. Tweet at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. The show sets up like this. Coming up next segment, a conversation with D'Angelo Hall, three-time Pro Bowler. Calling it a day, we'll talk about his NFL career and what he's going to do going forward. D'Angelo Hall is coming up in about 15 minutes in hour number two. Philadelphia Phillies manager Gabe Kapler. Phillies are playing really well right now. Gabe Kapler joins us, top of hour number two. And in the third hour, we're talking NFL and gambling. Charles Robinson. It's going to be legal to gamble in many states. How's that going to impact the NFL? How's that going to impact what we see, how we cover the game, how you watch the games? And what should the NFL be concerned about? Charles Robinson from Yahoo joins me in the third hour. So that's how it all sets up. I mean, you know what's expected of you. Come and get some. Have a take. Don't suck. Come strong. Let me start with game two of the Western Conference Finals. Houston 127, Golden State 105. And if you watch game one, you were probably pretty surprised by what you saw last night. Now, one guy who was not surprised was Warriors coach Steve Kerr. He's seen this before. You could tell during that in-game interview that he was concerned about how his team showed up in the first quarter, and then that did not change throughout the game. So exactly what happened to Golden State last night? I have thoughts. I'll give you my thoughts, but I think I'll go ahead and let Steve Kerr answer that first.
Give them the credit. They came out and played a great game, and they got everybody going. And so they got, we got what we deserved. So they kicked our butts. No other way to say it.
Boy, that sounds like a guy, doesn't it, who played for Phil Jackson. He started off by saying, give them some credit. He didn't say it exactly the way Philip did back in the day, but he sounds like a guy who played for Phil Jackson.
You give them some credit. I mean, for real.
Right? For real. And Steve Kerr is right. Houston did kick Golden State's butts, and there's really no other way to say it. Well, another way to say it is things like that happen. They kick their ass. But things like that do happen. Teams that win 65 games in the regular season and have a couple of Hall of Famers in their starting five are usually pretty good teams. They rarely get swept in the playoffs. Things like that happen. And especially when Houston's going to come out with everything they had the way they did. They were good in the first quarter. They were even better in the second quarter. And then they braced themselves because if there's anything we know about Golden State, they usually ball out in the third quarter. But Houston knew that was coming, and they even managed to win that quarter too. I'll tell you what it comes down to. Houston played like their playoff lives and their entire season depended on it. Not only that, but like legacies, reputations. All of it came down to that game. It was all on the line. They played as if all of that was at stake because it was. Golden State, though, played that game and approached that game like it was some midweek second game of a back-to-back against the Pistons in January. Golden State was sloppy. Sloppy defensively, sloppy offensively, and then when Houston got physical with them, they did not respond. Or as Draymond Green put it,
I just think our game plan discipline wasn't good. You know, we knew what type of force they would come out with. It's nothing we haven't seen before. We just didn't have a very good game plan discipline.
Right. I mean, they knew what kind of force they were going to come with, and they still didn't match it at all. I mean, Golden State was loose with the ball on offense. They were a mess on defense. They kept getting into bad matchups. They were reaching. They were giving up and ones. And this is key. This is key. Houston was finding Steph Curry, and Houston was going right at Steph Curry. Now, Steph will tell you he's okay. Steve Kerr will tell you Steph is okay. But to me, he doesn't look like he's okay. Put another way, Steph does not look like Steph. And James Harden and Chris Paul are attacking him every chance they get. Now, let's not get this twisted. Houston is a good team. They're a really good team. Bad teams don't win 65 games. But when PJ Tucker is lighting you up for 22 on 8 of 9 shooting, that's a sign that they're doing something well and you're doing something wrong. Really wrong. I mean, when PJ Tucker is looking like dead-eye Steve Kerr in his prime in a Western Conference Finals game, that's pretty interesting. Just as Nick Young getting 17 minutes in a Western Conference Finals game is pretty interesting. Hell, there was even a Joe Johnson sighting when things really got out of hand. And while it was not a good Warriors performance by any stretch, it is important to remember this. And this is what they do. This is what Golden State does. They've got games like this. They have games like this every so often. You know, like, I don't know, Game 3 against New Orleans when the Pelicans smashed them by 19. Now, these Rockets are not those Pelicans. But to the Warriors, I'm not so sure. To Golden State, when they went into Houston and they ripped the home court the way they did, Houston didn't look like much of a threat. So last night has got to be a big wake-up call for Golden State because Houston can score. That was never in doubt, even after everybody freaked out about their strategy offensively in Game 1. The big difference last night, though, was Houston locked in defensively. Klay Thompson was not getting those open looks where nobody was within 10 feet of him. They were getting crushed on the glass, and Steph only had 1-3. As a team, they only had 9. So, bottom line, what's it all mean? Golden State still got the split. Golden State is still going back to Oracle with the home court. Golden State is still in the driver's seat. But Game 3 got a little bit more interesting. Now, check that. A hell of a lot more interesting. And from the looks of things, we might just get the series that we have all been waiting on. And that is not something that I would have said or did say after Game 1.
Kicked our butts. No other way to say it.
No other way to say it. Kicked our butts. Just got a whole lot more interesting. That was me giving myself a tongue. I like my analysis of Game 1. Hey, look. I have not been giving myself enough credit lately. I know none of you have been giving me enough credit lately. If you want credit, just take it. I mean, give me some bleeping credit.
Give them some credit. I mean, for real.
Give me some bleeping credit. For real. 1-800-636-8686. Programming note. Gabe Kapler has been moved up. So we go back to back in hour number one. D'Angelo Hall is coming up next segment. I've got Gabe Kapler coming up right after that. Then we are wide open through the middle of the show. Charles Robinson in hour number three. Golden State fan, are you freaking? Are you tripping? Are you looking for the panic button? Or do you just know that this is what your team does? My only concern about that, if in fact I have any, is that I expect this in the regular season. We've seen this in the regular season. I even saw it in Game 3 against the Pelicans. But you are in the Western Conference Finals. And you do understand it's go time. But then again, what do you expect? Bob Myers said it at halftime. This is who we are. This is who we are. And as easy as Game 1 was, this is who they are. All right, some other things that I want to talk about today. Big sexy Bart Cologne. Right when you think this guy can't get any better or bigger or fatter, he takes a line drive off his gut, doesn't even blink, doesn't even flinch. I mean, it's one thing to be able to, quote, field your position, and I understand that he's like maybe the most skilled fat man in the history of the world, All that's fair. All that's true. But quite another to have a ball come off the bat about 100 miles an hour and have it go right off your gut and not even blink. Stay with it. Stay with it, Bart. Oh, he is. He did. And he pitched great. That story's coming up. I want to talk about that. I'll tell you something I don't want to talk about. The one thing I don't want to talk about, obviously. You ever notice how the one thing that I don't want to talk about is the one thing that many of you want to talk about? Have you ever noticed how that happens almost every single day on this show? I'm not talking about the Horton pooper. I'm just not doing it. I did not grind and dream my entire life of getting a radio slash TV show to talk about that. So I'm just not going to. At John R. Reeve tweets, sure, you can start with basketball, but why? What about the 101-mile-per-hour line drive that Bartolo blocked with his gut? If it were not the NBA playoffs and the Western Conference Finals and the series we were all been waiting for and the fact that Houston laid a beatdown on Golden State, John, I would have. I really would have. Dear Jim, with superstars like LeBron, Steph, and Durant playing last night, many people are shocked that I outperformed them and I stole the spotlight. I clearly demonstrated that I can take shots, absorb contact, and impressively rebound as well as any of today's premier athletes. Sincerely, Bartolo Colon's humongous boiler. Signed, Denlesks, washboard abs, and rock-hard glutes. War Bartolo achieving the cycle after the game by getting a single at Wendy's, a double-double at In-N-Out, a triple scoop at Ben & Jerry's, and a grand slam at Denny's. Boy, that's hitting for the cycle. Hey, James, was that the one at the baseball stadium in Round Rock? I recall it was about 300 degrees. Good times. Stephen S.A. It was. It was. Not only that, but that was the one where Nolan Ryan hit the stage. And that was one of my all-time favorite moments. In all my years of doing this, you know, I'm not going to get caught up. I'm not awed by who I see. I can't lie. Having a beer with Nolan Ryan blew me away. That was one of my favorite moments since I've been in the game, since I've been in this business. And all the things I've ever done, backstage at that tour stop, having a beer with Nolan Ryan ruled. Yes, it was that one. All right, I don't have time to reset that now, but maybe we'll double back. I'm looking for you to throw it back on a Thursday. Do you have any good jungle picks from back in the day? I'm going to run them out on Twitter. If you have it, send it to me. If I retweet it, 1.4 mil are going to see it. Send me your picks. Hit up Hawk 2. When we come back, I've got D'Angelo Hall, and I've got Gabe Kapler, and then clones. It's all about you. You can wreck my show then. Getting maximum performance out of anything depends on what you put into it. So if you want to achieve maximum performance at work, you put in the extra effort. When you want maximum performance from your kids, you put in the extra time and the tools. And then when you want maximum performance from your vehicle, you put in Castrol Edge, the titanium strong motor oil. Modern engines are smaller. They're more powerful. They operate at higher pressures than ever before. Higher engine pressure causes significant stress on the oil. So your oil needs to stay strong. I mean, first of all, be strong. Most of all, stay strong. That's Castrol Edge. Because Castrol Edge is formulated with fluid titanium technology to help reduce friction and maximize your engine's performance. Castrol Edge is 3 times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. It's not me just pulling that out of thin air. I'm not making that up. Kurt Orban did the test. Orban did it in the 5W30 VisGrade. So that should be enough for you. It's definitely enough for me. It's in all of our cars. Put Castrol Edge in your vehicle today. Castrol Edge.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
You're efforting D'Angelo Hall. Zipa is spelled Z-Y-P-P-A-H. Happy Z spelled backwards. So if you go to bed with Zipa, you're going to wake up with happy Z's. Did you know that one bad night of sleep can ruin your entire day? So are you traveling for Memorial Day weekend? Are you planning a summer vacation? You do not want to ruin the entire vacation with snoring all night long. Vacations are supposed to be restful and relaxing. How do you expect to get any rest if they're snoring all night? You need to get a Zepa before you take that vacation. Snoring is not sleeping. If you or somebody you know snores, go to Zepa.com. Zepa is guaranteed to stop snoring. You have nothing to lose. If you're not happy for any reason, return it for a full refund. Snoring is rude. It's disrespectful. It's offensive. You do not want to ruin another holiday weekend or summer vacation with snoring. Not for you, not for somebody else. Get your Zepa today. Ensure that you have an amazing summer. Get it today. I just threw up a couple of throwback picks. Hit me up on Twitter. Hit Hawk on Twitter. Send them to both of us. Check out that pick I put up on Twitter. Look at it right now, at Jim Rome. We are efforting D'Angelo Hall. I've got Gabe Kapler coming up on the other side. John D. tweets, you owe us in Detroit another tour stop. The Lions went 0-16. That's a golden ticket for a tour stop. You know, you're probably right. You're probably right. In terms of Round Rock, and I mentioned that one of my favorite moments since I've been in this, since I've done this, was talking to Nolan Ryan and his son. But having a beer with Nolan Ryan was great. And I can't remember if we did it before or we did it afterwards, but I know on that day, Nolan Ryan did hit the stage. I mean, freaking Nolan Ryan came to a tour stop.
Did Robin Ventura ever apologize for bruising your fist with his face? Because he owed you one.
When you saw old Robin Ventura coming out the hill, what on earth were you thinking? Were you laughing or you said, this boy's going to get a butt kicking?
Well, I can tell you, in my 27-year career, I had three people come out to the mound, and the first one was Willie McCovey. And the next one was Dave Winfield, and so when Robin Ventura came out, I was relieved to see a small guy come out.
Nolan freaking Ryan, if you need him. Boy, my man was way too classy for me to be hitting him with questions like that. By the way, Robin Ventura is classy, really classy. He just made a bad choice. He made a bad decision at the wrong time. You mentioned Robin Ventura probably was so angry, like, oh, no, I'm not having any of that. About halfway out there, he had to think to himself, oh, hell no. I'm going out to Nolan Ryan. I'm coming out to see Nolan Ryan. I'm going into Nolan freaking Ryan's office. You know he didn't want to. But once you take a few steps and you get halfway out there, you can't go back. You got to go out there. And he did. So that was an amazing tour stop moment. That's why we're throwing it back on a Thursday. If you have a moment or a thought like that, hit me up on the phones, or better yet, just hit me up on Twitter. Hit me up on Twitter with a good pick. I am efforting D'Angelo Hall, but not succeeding in those efforts. He's worth it. I'll wait on him. We'll find a place for him whenever he's ready. 1-800-636-8686. Gabe Kapler is going to join me at 40 past. Still not talking about what went down in that Hortons. Just not doing it, clones. Stop hitting me on it because you know I'm not doing it. And Matt T in TN98 tweets, I ate so much at a restaurant once that I couldn't afford the bill. So I told them, give me some bleeping credit. Signed, Kirstie Alley. I mean, Matt.
Give them some credit.
Like I said, Matt.
Real.
I've never blocked anybody on Twitter. And believe me, people tweet some pretty heinous things at me. I've never blocked anybody. As always, because I don't care. I don't care, eggs. Do what you gotta do. I don't care. Now, you, on the other hand, Matt, I'll make an exception with you. You might be the first guy ever I block.
Kirstie Alley.
There's no reason to reset Kirstie Alley.
Kirstie Alley.
It's got nothing to do with anything. Nothing to do with anything unless we're doing some sort of Cheers reunion, and we're not. Now, you want to talk about Frasier? Kelsey Grammer. I'll do that. I love Frasier. I love Kelsey Grammer. There's no punchline coming. I love the guy. I think he's amazing. Christy Alley. Nothing to do with anything. We're not talking about it.
Val Kilmer.
Bartolo Colon needs some space. Like, he's important enough, and that play last night was amazing enough, and his game last night was prolific enough that I should have got him higher in the show. I'm just not doing it right now because he needs room. Vegas, Golden Knights, did it again. Their pregame show is better than most games I've seen. And they show up last night and they get it done. Oh, also, this story comes up. It seems like every year, usually once a year, there's some idiot that goes back to high school. And I'm not talking about that loser that shows up a year or two out, who's hanging around the student parking lot in his Letterman's jacket. I'm talking about the idiot that re-enrolls so he can play high school football or high school basketball. Every year there's one of those, and now we have another one, but this one may take the biggest prize of all. A 25-year-old dude who re-enrolled to play high school basketball. It wasn't that good. It didn't make the team that good. Man, how badly do you want to throw it back? How badly do you want to go back in time that you'd be willing to lie? Not only that, but try to capitalize on a natural disaster. How badly do you want to be in high school to not only lie, but to enroll in high school and take all the classes so you can play basketball again? Hey, look, I understand that high school was the best time for a lot of people. I understand wanting to go back. But man, not if it means taking high school biology, geometry, and chemistry again. I don't want it that badly. Who am I kidding, man? High school sucked. I hated high school. I would never go back. Much less go back and take classes I didn't do well in the first place. This guy did, though. Golden State, Houston. Now you've seen two games. Two totally opposite games. How do you think it plays out? Nicholas Todriff tweets, "The jungle is bigger and stronger than ever. Bring back the tour stops, please. Hashtag jungle loyalty." Here's the thing, Nick. The jungle might be bigger and stronger and better than ever before, but the tour stops can never be like they used to be. It just wouldn't play out like that. It's a very different time. I could not roll out and set this thing up 3 or 4 times a year and get 15, 18, 20,000 people to fill arenas like they used to. But you know what? I could bring them back. I could bring them back and maybe unplug them. Or I can bring them back in, you know, kind of more intimate settings. I mean, just to do something a little bit different. I thought about it. I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about a lot of different things that we can do going forward. Because I've never been more into the show than I am right now. I'll take your ideas. Nick, anybody else want to say anything that I can do to make it better? What can I do for you, clones? What can I do for you above and beyond showing up here every single day and trying to give you the best show I can possibly do? What more can I do for you? Just ask. And then I'll ask you for something. Vote for me for the National Radio Hall of Fame. I'm going to cash that chip. Not yet. In a few weeks. When the voting begins, clones, I'm looking for you to pick me up. Pick me up in a huge way. All right, so I am efforting D'Angelo Hall still. When we come back, Gabe Kapler, manager of the Phillies, joins us. Philly, the city of champs. And phone lines are open. Go ahead and use them. In the meantime, take a few moments. If you've got a picture that you want to throw it back to, hit us up on Twitter. We are retweeting the best picks.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
We found D'Angelo Hall. He's going to join us at the top of hour number two.
Definitely can find me.
I did find him. So he's going to join us at the top of hour number two. In a few moments, I'm going to have the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, Gabe Kapler. And one more thing about the picks, and I appreciate you sending me all your picks that we're throwing it back on Thursday with, but they do not have to be tour stop picks. Any pick. As an example, me standing in the middle of like 12 Hooters waitresses. Ryan Kane, man. Kane, you think that's the funniest thing ever, don't you? Kane sends me that all the time. He didn't send that because I asked for a throwback pick. He just likes to send me that and talk junk about it. I see you working, Rhino. So, yeah, I love the tour stop picks, but when I say send me a throwback pick, I'm talking about any kind of pick that you have relating to the show. tour stop or otherwise. I know a lot of your picks are from the tour stops, but if you have a different pick, like Kane, go ahead and send it. Tweet it at Jim Rome or to Adam Hawk. All right, let me start my thoughts on Bartolo Colon for a minute, as I'm efforting Gabe Kapler too, and the Philadelphia Phillies are playing well. Somebody might want to pull the entire world off the Seattle Mariners because no one anywhere is having a worse week than these guys are. First, they find out that their best hitter has got to do 80 games of hard time for being a dirty drug cheat, allegedly. Except one problem, Robbie. You tested positive. And if you test positive, you are not going into the Hall of Fame. Robinson Cano pretty much would have been a lock. If you look at his career and you look at his numbers and you look at what other second basemen have done and what he's done, the guy was almost a guaranteed lock to go in. And now that he tested positive, he's essentially a guaranteed lock not to go in. So they've got that going for him and him. So they deal with that. And then you've got the rest of the non-Bull Reuters who've got to step into the box yesterday and go up against Bartolo Colon. Didn't go well. And I'll finish that thought momentarily. But as promised, we are joined now by the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. He's in his first season as manager of the Phillies. They're 24-16. They're one game out of first in the NL East. They're at St. Louis tonight. That is a 7:15 Eastern start. We are joined by Gabe Kapler. Gabe, it is so good to have you on the program. How are you?
Jim, I'm doing great. So nice to talk to you. It's been a long time.
It's been a long time, Gabe, and I know you're joining me from the dugout in Busch, which I really appreciate. Let me ask you about last night's game first. Gabe, you're coming off a 4-1 win over the Orioles where your starter, Nick Pivetta, went 7. He allowed 2 hits. He had a career-high 11 strikeouts. What do you make of the performance that you got from him last night?
Jim, good pitchers make adjustments in my mind, and Nick, from spring training through today, has made a ton of them. He's utilizing his breaking balls really effectively. They've been nasty. He's got 2 of them. He's got a curveball and a slider, and both of them have been really effective. He's using an explosive fastball at the top and the bottom of the zone that he's throwing for strikes, and that's what he's been working on since spring training, kind of working with a north-south attack, essentially top of the zone to bottom of the zone, doing a really good job. He's right where he needs to be.
And he's just 25, so I know the future is very bright for him, and I know you've got high expectations for it. You know, Gabe, that win took the team to 8 games over 500. It's the first time since 2011. I know it's your first season. I know you can't speak to what happened before you got there, but when you're coming into a situation where a team has suffered a lot of losses, how viable is it to get off to a start like this?
It's huge. It's huge. And with that, the character of the club begins to emerge. So what I've noticed about our men recently is we're focused. And our staff and our players, they prepare like animals, but they also know how to keep it light and be themselves. So in the dugout, they're smiling and laughing. In the clubhouse, after games, they know how to celebrate. They know how to turn the page. That's critical. They come back to the ballpark the next day after a loss, act like it didn't happen, enjoy being around each other. So those things that I just mentioned, some of that character plus talent, and obviously you can't do anything without talent, equal a pretty good start for us. Really proud of the guys.
Right. Character plus talent may equal culture, which we'll get to in a minute. Gabe Kapler, my guest. Now, coming into the season, the sense outside the organization, Gabe, was that you were building something and it was going to turn around. But I'm not sure how many people outside that clubhouse expected you to be 8 games over 500, just 40 games in. But you believe the team was ready to take a big step. What did you see that made you feel that way?
So, first of all, keep things in perspective, right? We're kind of at the quarter point of the season. So we understand that we have a long way to go. We never lose sight of the fact that, you know, we are only just beginning. But what we've seen so far, to answer your question directly, is we've seen a good offense, and it's the kind of offense that grinds the opposition down and can do damage. See a lot of pitches, and then we force pitchers to put the ball in the zone. When they do put the ball in the zone, we slug mistakes. We have some mix-and-match weapons in the bullpen, and as you mentioned at the top with Nick, we have some horses at the top of our rotation between Knowles, and Arrieta, and I'm speaking to Aaron Nola, Jake Arrieta, and then Nick Pivetta, with a couple of guys who, if they continue to develop, and Vince Velasquez, who goes tonight, and Zach Eflin, we've got a pretty good team top to bottom. So I think the start is just indicative that we have good talent.
Phillies manager Gabe Kapler, my guest. Now, Gabe, you and I have spoken a lot over the years, and it's very clear that you have a strong philosophy and an approach in the way you go about things. Now, there were some questions from the outside about the moves and decisions you made early on. How did you go about dealing with that and continuing to trust your own process?
That's a really good question. because I do think it's a balance between trusting the process and being responsive to the environment. So the first thing I did is I kind of listened to the voices, listened to the people that were questioning some of the ways we were making moves in game. And I was responsive to it, right? Like I listened to it, I allowed it to soak in, and I just used it as a way to challenge myself to get better and to be more prepared. At the same time, the approach that we're taking is not that different, right? Like there are a lot of managers who are matching up with their best relievers in the highest leverage situations by way of example. I'm really not that much different from these other managers. Played baseball my whole life. Been in major league dugouts for a long time as a player, minor league dugouts as a manager and as a farm director. I feel most comfortable in a baseball uniform, and I share a lot in common with what the other managers around the game are doing. It's just kind of, for whatever reason, identified as I'm doing things a whole lot differently with in-game strategy, and I don't really think that that's all that accurate, Jim.
You know, Gabe, one more point that I'd make. I mean, let's be honest. You were a 57th round pick in the MLB draft. You're the only 57th round pick to reach the majors, so you're not afraid of adversity. I knew you would stay the course. However, a number of the vets on the team said that they really liked the way you handled that. Carlos Santana said, quote, "We have his back. We had his back then, but we really have it now. He's a guy you want to play for. He's a guy you want to win for." So, Gabe, I bring that up because I knew you'd stay the course, but how much does it mean to you to have that kind of relationship with the players, especially your vets?
I don't think there's anything more important, and I'm really glad that you presented it the way you did. Obviously, that's a huge compliment to hear those things that Santana was saying, and I don't take it lightly. I think one of the reasons we're able to develop those relationships is by staying committed to them and having conversations even when they're not comfortable. So by way of example, with Santana, there are days that I want to give him a day off. And you know what he says? He says, "I don't want a day off. I want to play 162 games. So we don't just leave it at that. We have a discussion one day, and then we have it the next time I want to give him a day off. And I think that open line of communication, an office that is always open to having healthy, direct, honest conversations, creates those long-term relationships where we want to fight for each other, Jim. For me, it's kind of simple. It does take a lot of work, and you mentioned the word process. You have to be committed to it every day, but I do think it's valuable.
We're talking to Gabe Kapler. You know, Gabe, one of the topics that keeps coming up when I talk with managers who are having a lot of success right now is the relationship they have with their players, making sure that there is an environment for communication. You just said so yourself. To that point, you want to make sure that your office in Clearwater was a place where guys would hang out. Why is it something that you wanted to invest time and effort into, and why is that so important?
That's great. So not just the office in Clearwater, but also the office in Philadelphia.
Okay.
I remember walking into a manager's office and it kind of feeling a bit like a principal's office, right? Where there's like the big mahogany desk, this figure behind it that's kind of, authoritative. And I think a manager's office should be the opposite of a principal's office. When a player thinks about the office, I want him to think of it as a place where good news is shared and where positive conversations are had. And so that's how we focus. We focus on that in the office in Philadelphia, in Clearwater, in our clubhouse space. We want it to be a positive environment.
Gabe Kapler joining us. Gabe, you had a great quote when you told Sports Illustrated, "I'm not a golfer. I don't fish. I don't even watch TV. You give me a block of 2 hours, I want to sit down and drink coffee and scour information just because I'm interested in it. This is my happy fun time," end quote. I mean, I love that. What are some of the things that you like to research, and then how do you apply that knowledge to your life and to your work?
That's awesome. My mom always asks me, she always asks me as a manager, she says, are you having fun? And the word fun is just kind of, it's just a weird word for me. I enjoy myself, but it's not like the roller coaster kind of fun, like, I don't know, jumping out of an airplane, whatever you'd classify as fun. I like to go to a coffee shop or a really nice restaurant. I like to pull out my iPad, and I like to research articles on fitness or health or, you know, optimize for being just better at life in general. But then the other part of my time is usually scouring internet stuff like Fangraphs or some of the things that you're saying or things that other reporters are saying. I just want to learn as much as I can. I guess I'm just curious in general.
Yeah, speaking of fitness, I'm glad you brought that up, but I was going to get there anyway. I mean, being a manager is more than a full-time job. It would be easy to let other parts of your life slip, such as your own health and fitness, but you've been staying on that. Why is that so important?
Well, first of all, I got to be open. It's suffering, right? Like, the workouts, I'm still getting them in, but they're turning into these multitasking sessions where I'm listening to a rehab start. Like, by way of example, before I came in the dugout to talk to you, I was in our weight room here in St. Louis, and I had my earbuds in, and I was listening to Victor Arano's rehab outing in Lehigh Valley in AAA because I wanted to be aware of what was going on with him. So it's not like when I was, you know, 28 and got to just have the workouts to myself. I will say this, if you want your players to be healthy and strong and think about things like nutrition and think about things like training, you have to kind of walk the walk. So I'm not perfect by any stretch. It's not as good as it once was in terms of my diligence in the weight room and with my sprints and my exercise regimen. But I do feel it's important to walk that walk.
You know, obviously, Gabe, you've got the benefit of being with a team, so they're going to look out for the players and for their staff. What about nutrition? How do you eat now compared to when you became a manager?
I'm eating less, I guess, more than anything else, so a couple times a day. And that's, first of all, to be efficient, but also because I'm just a little bit hungry less, and I can find the two meals satisfy me. But we haven't made many changes to the food in the clubhouse in Philadelphia. In fact, I came into a really good food culture that was already thriving. And so we have this incredible chef. We have an incredible nutritionist. The food in the clubhouse is outstanding. And more than anything else, I've just acted as a support system and endorser of healthy food in our environment.
A food culture. I love that. I need to improve my own food culture. One last thought. When you were playing, and because you're approaching this, you know, you might say I'm not coming at it so differently, but I think you are coming at it with a certain kind of energy that I haven't seen before. When you were playing, who were some of the managers who had the biggest impact on you?
I think Johnny Oates was a big impact because he was so calm and cool. I just never saw him lose control in the dugout or in the clubhouse. Never even heard him raise his voice. He's very encouraging. Joe Maddon comes to mind absolutely as a guy that knew how to make players feel like $1 million, like the best version of themselves. And I wasn't a very good player, Jim, but every time I was in Joe Madden's presence, I felt like I was a good player, and that was important to me. Tito Francona always had a real strong demeanor. I always looked down from one end of the dugout at him, and he was always smiling. I guess all of my managers had important influences on me, and one of my minor league managers, his name was Dwight Lowry, had a strong, charismatic presence as well that to this day I remember as having a big impact.
Philadelphia playing really good baseball right now. They're 24-16. They're only a game out of first in the East, and they've got a game tonight against St. Louis. Gabe Kapler already there in the dugout and joining us here in the jungle. Gabe, I really appreciate you. Man, awesome to get caught up. Thanks so much for doing that, Gabe, and great to hear your voice.
Jim, good getting caught up with you. Great to hear your voice as well. Stay strong out there, and I'll talk to you soon.
You got it, Gabe. Take care. Good job. Skip. Gabe Kapler, you remember that early this season when people were looking at him saying, why is he doing that? What's going on there? And he had a process. He stayed the course. And look at him right now. They're playing great baseball. And his vets are saying, oh, we've got his back. We definitely have his back. We love playing for him. And not only love playing for him, but we want to win for him. And does that make a great manager? When a manager can get the very most out of his players and guys want to win, not just for themselves, but for the guy they're playing for the guy that fills out the lineup card. I think that's kind of rare. Gabe Kapler joining us here in the jungle. All right, Philly fans, what do you make of what you've seen from him right now, and what do you think of the way your team is playing? 8 games over 500, 40 games in. You can't tell me you saw that coming. I don't think anybody saw that coming. They're ahead of schedule. D'Angelo Hall will join me at the top of hour number 2. It does not mean that you shouldn't call. In fact, it means you should call. 1-800-636-8686. Another week about to go in the bank. And I'm still trying to give away a golden ticket. Good news is, I took away 2 golden tickets this week. Bad news is, I did not replace them. I did not give one up. The golden ticket goes to somebody who gets the at-large berth into the smack-off. The person who wins the smack-off wins $5,000 and wears the crown for an entire year. Not only that, people who've won that event have gone on to get their own programs. People who have not even won the event have gone on to get their own programs. It's a day where you want to be on the big stage. Somebody might notice how much game you have and give you something. Money, an opportunity, your own show, a platform, who knows, maybe a podcast. But you have to be in it to get that kind of consideration. The smack-off is a day when a number of not only listeners, and the audience is humongous, there are decision makers listening on that day. Trust me. So you want to be in it. 1-800-636-8686. Rome, on behalf of Team Canada, in regards to the regrettable Tim Hortons incident yesterday, we're on to Cincinnati.
We're on to Cincinnati.
Thanks. Signed, Canada. Oh, no, that's going to stick to you, Canada. if I were to talk about it. And I'm just not. So you're lucky. You're really lucky. D'Angelo Hall joins me when we come back, and then we'll open phone lines until hour number three. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Do not go anywhere. D'Angelo Hall.